Hey, I finally got Craig to show up. All right, Craig, it is nice to see you today. I'd like to start off the quote-unquote day by saying that my daughter is joining us. She's 8 months old, actually almost 9 months old. And she doesn't know the meaning of patience, or she's not very good with, being quiet in general, or in recording. Right now, she's hungry, and we're eating potatoes. Just waiting on some other interesting folks to show up. Until then, I can let you listen to my daughter's cute noises. But also, I would like to just briefly mention again that we're doing these chats every week. Every other week is Tuesday, and the ones in between are Thursday. Tuesday at 9 Eastern Standard Time, and Thursday at noon, 12 Central Standard Time. I guess let's keep it Eastern. It'd be 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Looks like the Rev will be joining us soon. And I'm sure he's got a lot more to talk about than babies. Today I wanted to talk to him about somatic healing therapy, along with a few other things like PTSD and salvia trips. He has a podcast called Reincarnation. And it's quite interesting. He had an episode, I think it was episode 10, was with someone that does somatic therapy, and he does it with psychedelics, I believe. But even without the psychedelics, it seems really helpful to release traumas and just kind of get in tune with your body and what energies are being stored there, and what energies you don't want stored there anymore. I'm not sure. I want to say that this sort of thing doesn't require you to relive the trauma like a lot of things, a lot of therapies will. What's the word I'm looking for? They will require it. The interesting thing about somatic healing is that it is, yeah, you know what? I think you do kind of relive it. So he mentioned like they talked about it, and while they're talking, based on what their body does, he could see where the negativity or the negative energy was being stored. So the trauma isn't what happens to you. The trauma is when you store that energy in your body. And I keep looking to check to see if he's here because he's probably understands this better than I do, because he, was the one asking the questions to this. No, sorry, my baby just grabbed the spoon full of mashed potatoes, and it's not just mashed potatoes; it's got some tomato in there, so it's kind of messy. I'm gonna stop talking for a minute, and Rex can cut out the silence. Well, anyways, so a few of the other things I'd like to talk about were salvia experiences and and PTSD, not necessarily together, but just the effect that PTSD has on our society as a whole. It's really prevalent. It's like everywhere. Like people that you wouldn't expect to have PTSD are struggling from it. And some people don't even understand why. But I think the biggest thing is war veterans. You want some water, baby? Coming back, of course, they have trauma from seeing all sorts of horrific things and having to keep going about their day. Of course, when you're on the battlefield, you can't deal with... an example a friend gave is basically his... I was going to say friend. Maybe it wasn't a friend. I think it was a friend. But it was definitely a... another soldier on the same side of the battlefield. So someone in his... I want to say a bunch of like weird words that are connected with video games. Because I've never been in war. Never been in the army. I would never join the army. Unless, you know, I guess there was a good cause that was actually threatening to invade or something. I don't know. It seems like America's wars are mostly regime change wars where they don't like that this country doesn't want to use their money, or you know, this country has oil and they want to charge too much for it, so let's bomb the shit out of them. And I chuckle at that. Not because it's actually funny, but because it's kind of, I guess what I do is I find humor in things, to, cope. And, it's strange how we can find, pain to be funny. Like, your best friend falls on his ass, and, you just bust out laughing. Is that like an anxious laugh? Or are we as a society? Hey, what's up, man?
Yo, how's it going? Sorry for that delay. I just need to make sure that my mic is on the right mic. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you're excellent on my screen. Is my and stuff all okay?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, cool. I just need to see how to change audio in.
Oh yeah, that's always a pain in the ass.
Yeah, exactly. Oh wait, maybe that's the button. Oh, okay. Input device.
Okay, there we go. Now we got.
Oh, it sounds even better now. Ooh. You sound like a podcaster. Ooh.
Smooth. Yeah.
I'm just kind of rambling until you got here.
To interrupt your rambles.
No, dude, you're good. I was honestly, I'm multitasking today. I don't have a babysitter, and my child is eating mashed potatoes. As I told, can you hear her?
Potato podcast. Yeah, I can. Okay. Sounds like she's having a lovely time with her meal.
Yeah. She she's 9 months old, so she's all over the place.
I'm curious, like with you, I guess she's not necessarily at the age that it might start to trigger like early memories and stuff. But do you, like, in having a kid, are you noticing more like from your own childhood that's like being revealed? Is like I'm not a father or anything yet, so I'm just curious for you how. Because becoming a parent is kind of like going, like, you're becoming your parent, raising yourself almost, right? So it's like, I'm just so curious about that process of becoming the thing that you were when, or that your parents were when you were younger.
That's an awesome question and really good point. I think, honestly, so this is... I was going to say it's off topic, but there is no on topic, so it's hard to be off topic on something like that. My Okay, I'm going to go off on a few tangents to answer that question.
Got to make the weave, yeah.
My family, I don't feel like I've ever really fit in with them.
Mm-hmm.
I remember as a kid thinking like, man, I can't believe that my mom is treating me this way. And not that she was a horrible mom or anything. She did, you know, good for what she knew. And, you know, it's all you can do. I don't hold a grudge or anything against her, but I don't feel like I was really prepared for a few things. But that not isn't that important. What I guess I was going to say is that I'm not raising my kid anything like how my parents raised me, except for, I guess, a few things. Like, there's some things that you don't notice because they're subconscious. Like, like really weird, random things that I have absorbed and put out now that I am a parent, like you said. Like, as a weird example, is not that weird, but it's kind of strange. Whenever my kid is eating something, and you can tell she's enjoying it, I like I look at her and smile, and I make this nom 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 sound. That's good, isn't it? You're liking that, huh? And my mom was feeding my kid the other day, and she did the same thing. I was like, oh, that's not me, that's her. And for a minute, I was kind of annoyed by that. Like, I don't want to be my mom, but then I was like, well. You know, it's there's no change.
That's so fascinating.
It's so strange.
That's almost like
things like that.
Because when you think of like that kind of thing, it's almost like some actions are patterns of mind or patterns of expression that are almost like timelines back to some ancestor or whatever who started that, right? Like they're
a pattern
that's just been passed down from family, and every family has like their own versions of that we don't know until you go and see a family together and you're like, oh, you're fucking weird. But every family is fucking weird, you know?
And it's beautiful, really. Although like from the son perspective, I respect my mom, but I do not get along or agree with her often. So we're family and we will love each other and we help each other, but and I know that my mom doesn't feel this way about me, but I don't know my mom. And that sounds messed up. I don't know. I
think that sounds pretty almost like common for the age these days in some ways, though.
I guess so, yeah. It's just that she has this aura of like my little boy, and she's got all these expectations and judgments. She's always judging me, and she acts like she's the most open-minded person in the world, but
yes,
she's not.
I get that for sure. Even like in my own family, like my mom is she's Catholic, so a lot of my upbringing, right, has been like
getting out
of those expectations of like my dad isn't Catholic, so at least it's been an interesting kind of weave between someone who I couldn't even say is agnostic, because that's too much of a word towards it. And my mom, who's very Catholic. Though. Yeah. He's not atheist, but agnostic is like that.
Too
he's
strong a word.
Exactly. Like, like he's deeply considering that there could be something. Like, I don't think he even like puts his mind that deep into that question. So I don't even like saying that because. it's been interesting, like in terms of my mom, who's Catholic, and even still, like the same, like they are at least of similar enough mind that they got married and all this stuff. So it's like breaking out of the mold of expectations of what our previous parents' generation was. A lot of these people went through like the Nancy Reagan Just Say No to Drugs campaign and all this stuff. And it's like now I'm the child who is like the black sheep of the family, who for seven years had to talk about the benefit of psychedelics until they could listen to me. Because at first it's defensiveness of my baby is doing drugs. And at some point they have to realize that it's not detrimental, especially from the ways that I've been able to explain it. And then you can come to some kind of like middle ground or resolution based on that experience.
Oh yeah, I can totally relate. I mean, except I haven't been talking to them about all the benefits, except for recently, I guess. Except for cannabis. Pretty much,
Yeah.
I got in a not too bad of a car accident when I was like 17 or 16, and I hit my head on the steering wheel and was in the hospital for like 6 hours that I can't remember. And I was asking a bunch of the same questions and stuff, and that's when my mom found out that I smoked pot, because the police were badgering me, thinking I was on drugs, but I had a fucking concussion. So that's why I'm asking all these questions. Like, dude, chill out. When I found that out, I was so pissed. But they were like
Fully
asking if
indented.
my mom came in and was like, the police are asking if you do any drugs. Do you smoke pot? And I told her, yeah, but not today.
Probably
And
would have
that's
been
how she found
ultimately
out I
better
smoked.
for your concussion too, if you had.
Yeah, right. The anti-inflammatory and yeah, all sorts of good stuff. I don't know where. Oh, psychedelics. My mom, when she found out that I had done mushrooms, she was like horrified, like terrified that I was gonna jump out a window or something. And
Yeah.
I told her, I was like, that's propaganda. That's not,
Exactly.
I mean, some people might do that. She was like, my friend's son, he had been microdosing mushrooms, and the other day or a couple years in, he just up and jumped out the window, and she doesn't have her baby boy anymore. And I was like, first of all, it doesn't sound like he was a baby. And second of all, if he jumped out a window, it was definitely not the mushrooms that caused it. They might have stimulated something in him that he was already feeling. They
Yeah,
might have,
especially with
awakened.
the
Yeah, I think she said he started doing bigger doses, and she was worried about
microdose.
it being addictive. And
Okay,
I was like, it's not addictive. In fact, it's got like it's the opposite of addictive. You
yeah,
at least
exactly.
physically, you can't psychologically, maybe, but anything can be addictive
Yeah,
psychologically,
exactly. For me, they're pretty anti-addictive psychologically. Like, yeah, they
oh
feel
yeah.
great when you're in there, but to go in there, like, what a challenge
Oh
to
yeah, I
put
have to
yourself into
convince
that
myself
world.
every time.
Yeah, like I get like the crazy anxiety where I cough all morning just because I know that I'm about to do the psychedelic. But then right when I take it, it's like, oh, cool. No, it's all good.
Interesting.
Everything's great. But
Wow, I've never
it's
heard of
like,
that. So you have like physical symptoms, your body trying to get you not to do it.
But it's so weird because like I'm not an anxious person. Like the only times that I actually get anxiety is like the day that I'm thinking about doing a psychedelic, or if I had coffee and like I have a lot to do on the day and I have like that choice overwhelm, and it's like I would need to be productive, but I haven't necessarily like started with the first thing. It's like when you have a whole bunch of shit on your
Oh,
mind.
yeah.
If you don't write it down on a list, it's overwhelming. But if you write it down, you're like, oh, there's five things to do. So that's how
Yeah.
anxiety can get to me sometimes. But man, with psychedelics, I know I'll be okay. I've had unbelievable experiences for quite a few years. But in building up of these unbelievable experiences, I think part of it is like my body knows that it's not like, oh, I'm just doing this for fun. Like it is spelunking the caves of consciousness. So I guess my body's like, are you sure you're ready for this? You better be ready because I'm going to make sure that you can make it through this fear barrier before we let you do it.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. It does seem like that a lot of times. I'm not sure. I am an anxious person. I kind of contribute it to ADHD. I feel like ADD is like, for whatever reason, my brain isn't good at just taking in, one stream of information.
Yes.
I can't focus as easily on that one stream, at least. It's like all these streams are coming in, and you're gonna focus on all of them at the same time, and it's like
Yes.
overload, and the brain can't handle it. And so I feel like that's where most of my anxiety comes from. But
Yeah.
whenever I'm gonna take something, like I have had DMT for 2 or 3 years, and I
Yeah.
have not convinced myself to do it yet. Like, I've tried, I've done, well, that's the problem, because as Yoda says, there is no try, it's do or do not, and I have done not. but I,
it's so really I've done, easy to I've done, do that with DMT, right? Like the do not, yeah. Really simple.
Yeah, I have loaded plenty of bowls, you know, I've done a bunch of micro doses. There was one time that I almost, I guess you would say, blasted off.
Yeah.
And it was like not even overwhelming experience. It was just like horrifying.
Interesting.
It started the experience and it felt nice. I was like, this is cool. But it was also cold out and I was in my car. Mm-hmm. And so I started shivering and I took the one big hit, held it as long as I could, and then tried to get the next second hit. And the third hit was in the chamber, but I couldn't move my body. I could not convince my body to take the third hit. If I had taken it, I knew, because it was already getting weird.
Yeah.
It was like I was in a painting, and the painting was like swirling in because the paint was still wet, and I was swirling with the paint, and because I was the paint, and the shadows were getting all wavy, and then I was like, come on, do it, and my body was screaming, no!
Yeah, it's amazing like how far two hits get you in terms of the psychological experience, that in terms of like the mind fuck of it, it's as strong as like the craziest trip you've done. So to tell yourself that it's okay to take the last one while you're in that is unbelievably difficult. So I totally know what you mean about like having been like sitting on DMT but not using it for 2 years, because I like in my experience, when I was ready to do DMT, it was weird because I just kind of like opened Facebook and somebody who I went to high school with had made a Facebook status that essentially just said like, I love DMT. And I'm like, that's a weird fucking thing to post on Facebook. And he came over like the next day or something. And he's like, yeah, I'll just bring some over. It's all good. and we have an experience. Like I have a breakthrough. But after that experience, I had already done a lot of reading of like 5-MeO-DMT and stuff like that. And I knew that that was off sometime, but I knew that I wasn't like ready for it. I remember coming down after DMT and my friend was like, oh, do you want to go do that again? I'm like, maybe one day, but there's like so much for me to process. It's going to be like at least a year before I even think about trying it again.
Definitely.
So I waited 7 years to do 5-MeO-DMT, or maybe like 6.5 or something. Like knowing that I was kind of building up to that, but it's interesting because like similar to you, I had some of it for the longest time and and ended up going to a ceremony that someone else was hosting and never used the supply that I got when because it's legal in Canada too. And was still more legal in the past. Yeah. Like I think it's slightly changed categories, but it's still like a legal research compound.
Nice.
So I've like I had it for a while, but never actually utilized it, even when I actually had my experience.
Huh? How many times had you done DMT between then and the 5-MeO?
I did the full breakthrough, which like it still feels like part of me is in the field of the experience that I was in, which is part of why I don't feel that I need to go back very often.
Right now, even
like the experience of DMT, like when you're really in the breakthrough spot, for some people, you can get to this piece of non-duality or the feeling like you've lived like 2 seconds, but also like 50,000 years.
Like
you go into the place of non-duality to some degree. So, in that place that I experienced and having the memory of timelessness, that timelessness is timeless, right? Like it still is penetrating to today. And it even reminded me of like in the Discord that we know each other in, High AF posted that art of the now. And then I posted like that Salvia droid drawing. That feeling of being outside of the timeline is outside of the timeline. And I feel like that's truly who I am. Yeah.
I see. To an extent, I feel like that's kind of, I feel like that's what everyone is, but the difference is that you now are aware of it and made like aware of it permanently kind of thing.
Yeah, it was like a forced, forced identification with the context of who I am instead of the moment by moment frame. And with that, like all worries, anxieties, problems, struggles, everything just, at least in the moment, completely dissolved and dropped away because they are not part of the context. They are only part of the frame. And with that mentality, anytime that I can drop back into that memory of being, it helps me drop some of those side worries and anxieties and stuff because I see the playing board or whatever. Like if you are playing the board game life, it's kind of like normally you're the dude in the car going step by step doing your career. At some point you're going to land potentially, if you rolled the middle spinny thing right, you'll land on a tile that says Rian does DMT, and then you come and realize that you are the dude playing the game. You're not the guy in the car. How could you worry about the other steps on the field when you know that there are possible, like that they might pop up?
And you've got such a wider perspective, and you know, that kind of reminds me of what they say about shamans, is that they are in all dimensions. Like they'll go up to a higher dimension and see that, oh, this guy's cheating on his wife, or you know, it's gonna rain in 4 days and things like this, because they are the player. They can see everything much better than we can from down here, or I guess we can see everything much better than when we're down here.
Yeah.
I was reading, like,
this gives you a wider context of all of it. Exactly.
I was reading this book, the one that I commented on, and it says something about this, about how there time's an illusion. They say it so matter-of-factly. Time's an illusion, and basically we're convincing ourselves of this so that we can understand what it's like to be in this reality, because apparently this is all a game that we've gone into to learn and release judgment and things like this, and it feels right. Weird. It makes sense, and it makes life easier, in my opinion. It makes it all easier to deal with, because it makes it seem like there's a point. Not only is there a point, but I came here for a reason.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I didn't just appear out of my mom's vagina one day because my parents decided to have sex. I appeared out of my mom's vagina because I entered a portal somewhere, and my mom's vagina was the other end of that portal. I chose to be there. I chose for her to be my mom and for him to be my dad.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It kind of just resets some. And this is something that I think I've read before, but it didn't resonate on as many levels as it did whenever they put it in this way. And I'm obviously oversimplifying the whole thing, but
well, it really, like, it actually reminds me, a few months ago, like kind of in the fall, I was doing a lot of wild mushroom picking and stuff like that. Like, I really just like to go on walks and go find wild mushrooms that are edible or psychedelic or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I went on a walk with one of my friends to Stanley Park nearby in Vancouver. And we were having a great time. But towards the end, I had kind of like a on the natch mystical experience. And it felt like my 5-MeO DMT experience. And we were talking about pretty much exactly what you were just saying. But it was interesting because the way that he started framing it was, like, I'm sure you're aware of the show Adventure Time.
Oh, yeah.
There is apparently like a 9-episode arc, and I think I've seen some of it, but it's this idea that there is like the prime evil being and the prime good being, and they have like this, like, almost a cosmic polarity dance of whatever. I haven't seen the whole series, so I don't want to that was just the way that he started talking about it. But the whole, like, idea behind it was, like, essentially that this ultimate good and this ultimate evil polarity, they can't be at odds against each other, because, like, one has
to
be implicit in the other. Exactly. And it's like, no matter if battle against each other will only just cause more of that. So in the end, it's talking about that the prime evil thing and the prime good thing almost have to like accept each other as implicit. And what happens is like Finn and Jake or whatever as the heroes in Adventure Time are the non-partisan polarity. They're like us, the heroes who get to work out our patterns of consciousness. They choose to engage with the world. But ultimately, the polarity is there, like it, like the good and evil is done. It's implicit. It's out there. We are embodied to work out like the patterns of consciousness or like the sine wave of the negative and positive aspects of the polarity. But they're held open, and that's what existence kind of seems like, is us working out the polarity. So we were talking about this idea. I had an on the natch non-dual experience. Felt like 5-MeO-DMT was looking up at a building, and like a raven lands on the building at the exact time I'm having this mystic experience. And like a whole bunch of other weird things happen. So like totally in line with what you were just saying, and perfectly in line with the teachings that I got in that first DMT breakthrough of universal balance. Not worrying about everything, because that will put you into chaos and delusion. Just be with your breath and kind of keep going through the timeline that you're on.
Hello?
Oh, there we go. Hello, now I can hear you.
Hey, I don't know what happened. Sorry.
That's okay. Did could you hear me during that last end bit of the rant?
No.
So hi T-Rex. Oh, you couldn't.
What's up, man? No, last thing I heard you say was the raven landed, and I was like, whoa, that's cool.
Yeah, so essentially like it landed, and it was just like that was like the peak of the 5-MeO kind of feeling. Uh-huh. And then it was just weird that all these synchronicities were happening as I was having this on the natch experience, just from thinking about humans working out the polarity of mind.
Yeah, like it was your brain, your mind literally expanded.
Yes.
And that's why it felt like that. I remember that happened to me when I was a kid. I was like 5 years old, and for whatever reason, I was thinking about like the planet and the stars, and I went from me to like my house and like zoomed out to the planet. And I think I stopped at the planet and was looking at the sun, and I just like, my brain just like, whoa.
Yeah. Like you actually like felt yourself in that expanded state when you were younger.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. And I think the closest thing like that happened to me, like quote unquote on the natch, was I was 16 and I had just bought this candy, and it was whatever. It was like some really good chocolate. And my friend was reaching into my jacket pocket to steal it. And I was like, oh, he's going to regret that. And like as hard as I could, I tried to hit his arm with my elbow. Instead, he moved it, and I hit the chair. I hit my funny bone, and hurt so bad, like excruciating pain going from my elbow all the way up to my fingertips. Mm-hmm. And I'm just holding my arm. I stand up. It's in the middle of class, physics class of all places. And once it like reached my fingertips, I was like, holy shit, they're going to have to cut off my arm. And I passed out. And when I passed out, I was like traveling the galaxy. I was like talking to planets and stars, and saw all these beautiful colors, and I can't remember any of the conversations, much less, you know, the visions, but it was intense. And then I come back to class and only 9 seconds had passed. It felt like decades. I'm not kidding you. It felt like decades. It felt like forever I was gone, lived lifetimes, and then come back and everyone's laughing at me. Apparently, while I was out, I was repeating they think it's the number 9, 9, 9, 9, 9. And I was thinking, you know, I was probably out for about 9 seconds. Like they said 10, it was probably 9.
So you had like an error, like a glitch, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9.
Exactly. Make it to 10.
Yeah. That's so fascinating, man. Because I remember like I used to have fainting spells when I was younger in high school. Cause I have this, I think like when I was younger, I tried to do a backflip on a sled and I landed on my head. And I think it was really stupid. I think it fucked up my vagus nerve in my neck, like a little bit. Ooh. Such that sometimes when I like turn it wrong, it's almost like there's a slip knot or something in the nerve, and the knot kind of comes undone. and it will occasionally cause like a reset of my nervous system or something, and it just makes me pass out immediately. My whole body
power like, down.
Yeah, like I see tunnel vision. It goes short circuit, black. Dude. Yeah, and I've had a few experiences where I don't want to say like it feels like a psychedelic or 5-MeO because it doesn't have like the necessarily the psychedelic feeling of taking a drug to it, but it's like conscious reality drops away and I'm in a dream world that is outside of time, similarly to what you're saying, like there it could be lifetimes, and it's like I remember feeling like I was interacting with the raw imaginal stuff that created like the Mario series and stuff like that, and then whenever I would come back into like my body, I would not know where I was, like amnesia for a few seconds until like
exactly
the timeline comes back online. I'm like, okay, yeah, I just fell down in PE class. I'm being slapped by my PE teacher to wake up.
Yes, that's exactly how it felt. It was like, who are all these people and why are they laughing at me?
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, these are my friends. Fuck you. Why are you laughing at me? I just passed out.
It happened to me once when I was working on a chicken farm.
Fuckers, people.
Pardon?
When there's when you're not allowed to say fuck like this when there's a lady on the call.
Hello, I did not know you were here. I would have definitely
probably
still said
seriously.
Fuck. Sandy, is that how you say it or is it different?
No, it's Sandy, yeah.
All of these interesting things on the letters of your name made me question it. I was like, I have no fucking idea how to say that. It's good to have you here.
This is T-Rex I popped in too. I'm in the middle of class and have to get back to it in a minute, but I just wanted to pop in and listen for a minute and say hi.
You came in on a pretty interesting note, man.
Yeah, it was an excellent conversation to go into from coming from talking about formulating an offer on a real estate deal. So thank you guys for switching.
Give you a little break.
I've been
there.
Using my break to play with Unity and toy with VR World. So this is a good switch from that too.
That's well, we're kind of talking about VR world.
Exactly.
I mean, we are in the VR world.
I don't know how to force them and put them in front of your face.
Well, all you have to do is do a backflip on a snowboard and land on your head.
Well, yeah. I try that a lot. And I
it's like when you get bit by a spider, only one Peter Parker gets made from that, right? Like,
right,
it's a very
exactly.
specific bad backflip.
Yeah,
hey, exactly. So that, before you go, I have a question. Have you ever had, like, head injuries, Rex?
Me? For sure. I busted my head open. I got stitches right across my forehead. I've hurt myself a lot, yeah.
I'm starting to wonder if maybe having head injuries might be a prerequisite to this.
Yeah, it's definitely, I would definitely think it's had some impact. I was into extreme later, like aggressive inline vert skater. I did a lot of BMX biking. I'm a snowboarder, a skier, a whitewater paddler. I've hit my head a lot.
Inline vert skating sounds unbelievably intense.
Well, it was until like, you know, 1997 when the real fruit booter thing came around, and here I was, this bisexual 15-16 year old being called gay every day because I rollerbladed, not because I like to make out with men. It was all very confusing. Very confusing. And then that whole industry, the whole sport was destroyed by this skateboarder plot against them, calling them all gay. Didn't make any sense. It was
That's
a lot of fun
nuts.
Though. I loved hucking myself up our vert wall and just spinning and knowing wherever I came down, I probably could land because these things are easy. It was like a cheat switch on a skateboard.
Damn. But, That's
yeah,
awesome.
It was a crazy, crazy time. I loved those days, man. I hit my head a lot, though. And, you know, whitewater boating, I flip upside down in a kayak, and there's rocks under there. I've definitely broken helmets and shit.
Did you have any, like, weird experiences in either in the immediate with a head injury or kind of like he was saying with his, like his funny bone in the 999? Did you have anything like that that was altering?
No. Not necessarily. Most of the time I just get to this state. I mean, it's not like it happened once. It's my whole life. When I get to this state where my body's like in this shock mode going, oh shit, you might be dying. Hurry up, fix this. It's like this weird calm, I start getting fixated on really stupid shit. Like when I busted my head open, broke a collarbone, broke ribs. I was on a mountain bike and I came back crawling to my house screaming that I hurt my new bike. And my mom's like, "What the hell are you talking about? You're bleeding everywhere." And all I was concerned about was my bike. And I was completely calm about it, even though I drugged myself there. I don't know. I get to this weird place, and I've even experienced it recently when I get hurt. And I cut myself and got all lightheaded and woozy and then fell and busted my shit. And it's just like I get to this calm place where I'm just like, oh, I should worry about this stupid thing. I don't know what it is. But no, it's never been trippy. It's always just terrible. It's just terrible.
Damn. Like an ordeal. And that's what I find so funny is like, even like with psychedelics and stuff in olden times, in areas that did not have like psychedelic plants, they would do ordeal poisons or these other kind of things, pain, hitting themselves with stinging, like whatever it is, right? So even when you're saying something like it was terrible, but you're still having some of these interesting effects of mind, it reminds me a little bit of that it's not about psychedelics or whatever. It's that any of these things can occasion states beyond baseline.
Oh, definitely. For sure. All right. My thing's starting back up. I got up here.
Shit.
I love you, boys.
Glad you made it on.
Sandy, I'm glad to hear your voice. I look forward to another conversation with you, dear. Next Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll talk again. I'm just repping for the UK and for South Africa on this call.
I'm glad you're here. Thank you. I'll catch y'all
later.
Take
care, dude.
Enjoy class. Head injuries. Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't even know that it's us. I saw a video on YouTube just the other day of I think it was a lemur monkey.
Yeah.
Eating a toxic caterpillar. And like rubbing the venom all over its fur. And you could see that he didn't like it. But he was clearly tripping out. So that, I mean, I don't think humans are the only people or beings to alter their consciousness.
Definitely not. Like, I think even like jaguars eat Banisteriopsis caapi, like ayahuasca vine, and are very affected by it. There's definitely a lot of, there's something about altering out of baseline that seems implicit or a need or a want for like anything in embodied.
No, I hear you. I mean, that's a good way of putting it. I'm not, you know, sometimes I'm not always comfortable with it, but I like pushing my mind to places that it wouldn't ordinarily go, because I think it makes you look at things more sharply when you come back.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting to just know that there's safety beyond the state that you find comfort in. That, like, though it might be uncomfortable and intimidating, to come back after that experience is nearly always beneficial for an individual.
It is, except it does, for me, I mean, I've only started doing this 2 years ago because I heard about ayahuasca and I thought, oh, fuck, I'll never get to the Amazon. So I'll just, I'll just brew some at home. Mm-hmm. And before that, my life was like, oh, you know, Egypt, cool. Ancient ruins, cool.
Mm-hmm.
But now I question everything.
Yeah.
Like, is this my reality? Am I living in someone else's reality? Is this a simulation? And it's, you know, psychedelics are not for easy road thinkers.
No. Yeah, it's like if you want to be challenged or actually contemplate the situation that we're in, then it might be worth going into. But if that's too much for you to contemplate, then it might not be worth the opening of what that rabbit hole may entail for an individual.
It is an absolute Pandora's box.
Yes.
Because I cannot say for sure that this is a simulation, but I also cannot say for sure that it's not.
I think it's more likely that it is than it's not. But that doesn't mean that all life isn't some sort of like simulation, just because, you know, we may or may not be made of light. You know, yeah. What is that? It's just a word.
Yeah, well, I think about this idea simulation so much, and I think like because of the time that we're in of humanity and the way that technology's gone, like the current metaphor that we're using is simulation. But I don't think it's like we're in a computer. Yeah, exactly. I think it's more akin to like we are like if it's true that like everything is non-dual, that all is one or whatever, then this is just a simulation of duality, a simulation of separateness, and us embodied like as a human or whatever. But the real thing that we are transcends the experience that we're having. And I think in that way, like simulation's right, but I think so many people get stuck in the language of simulation and really thinking that they are in a computer, that there's some programmer who is a person dictating how things will unfold.
Let me throw at you what you're throwing at so many people, and myself included, but probably you at some point too. But the word computer, even, like, who's to say that the universe isn't a computer of some sort? Like it would work differently. Obviously, it wouldn't have like a hard shell or anything. It would probably just be energy, you know, constructed and organized in a specific way. But having a human being behind it, I doubt. Maybe.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, it would probably be some sort of intelligent AI, quote unquote, computer.
Yeah. But I think, well, like, I even
when I say AI, even that's not right, because it wouldn't be artificial. It would just be intelligence.
It would be like the intelligence, exactly. and that's what I find so interesting, is it's like exactly that conundrum. Like, as a human thinking about computers, yeah, we're in a computer. But to think that the thing that we are in is just limited to computerness, I think, is where we can't let the metaphor kind of continue, because it's computer like. Possibly, but I think it's not contained to what we think of as a computer from our human understanding, because they are, whatever it is at least like an order of magnitude from what our consciousness individuated is.
Yeah, at least, and that's probably putting a stretch. Like, it's probably a lot farther. Like, that comes from us, like the ego thinks it like forces you to believe that you are the center of, you know, everything, and that's because you are, right? From your perspective, you are, everything's happening around you. But yeah, we're probably not that important. I'm sure we're as important as everything else, but I'm not sure that
I don't know.
Things
we talk about aliens a lot, and like futuristic or a more sophisticated, more developed society, but we don't talk about the fact that, I mean, we could be the Neanderthals of the world, and there could be different variations before we get to the most sophisticated people, or we could be average, and we could be somewhere in the middle, and there could be people that are on a planet or in a universe or different galaxy that are still Neanderthals, and we are like Cro-Magnons.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it's probably closer to the second one. At least that's my opinion. I feel like We're definitely not, I guess you're right, we might be, compared to everyone else, we might be Neanderthals, but at the same time, like, we see monkeys and all these other animals, and they may not have, they definitely have consciousness, but they don't have the same, they can't, as far as we can tell, they don't have the ability to understand that they're conscious. They just are. They just be.
Well, so that's super interesting to me in general, and not specifically just with like primates and stuff, but even in the, they've done research recently on like ravens and crows, and they've determined that they have I don't want to say the same consciousness as humans, because that doesn't make any sense, but they have
something similar,
higher order thinking, very similar to humans.
That's the word.
Yeah, and what I find, and like conceptual thinking, but what I find so interesting about stuff like crows is like when you hear crows, it's the same, it, like to humans, it's the same call, right? It's like,
yeah.
But they can describe faces of individuals to the rest of their murder, and the rest of the murder can remember that face for like 7 years. So,
wow,
this consciousness, whatever it is, I try to think of like their That's language intense. Almost in a way of like radio signals, right? Like they have a certain frequency of speaking and we don't receive information yeah. on that frequency, but they just like radio waves, those can carry meaning and intention across that other birds are still able to cognate. So like if crows can do that, I wonder if they are discussing embodiment, if they are discussing what it means to okay. be a crow.
I take it back. You're right. There are some. I should have said the majority. There are yes. outliers like dolphins, maybe even sharks. I don't know that much about sharks, but I know dolphins are smart as hell, like smarter than us, probably. They enjoy life a lot more, that's for sure.
I mean, I what think the difference with us, elephants too, I mean, they are highly
Yes, elephants. Mm-hmm.
But I think the difference with us is that they became aware of their consciousness. So in a way, I kind of buy into the stone monkey thing. Just as an instance, I mean, I was so bored because we're in lockdown here and we cannot leave the house. And I live on my own. And like, I just thought, fuck it. I'm just going to have all the drugs I can possibly take. And see,
sounds
and
smart.
I was like, oh, look, what can this do? Anyway, I found out what a mug of mushroom tea and 3 acid tabs can do.
Oh, boy.
It was...
Do tell.
Initially, it was all fractal. You know, when you can't, when your hand eye cord completely disappears. And but I carried on writing the notes down because I was processing information that was coming to me so fast.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And like you were automatically writing from inside the experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's
that's epic.
It is a literal download of information. And as I was writing, I found that I could recognize my hand and my coordination improved by the minute.
Yes.
And then I was typing. And I wonder if that didn't, if monkeys didn't find a way and say, right, well, I can, you know, I can do this and I can do this. And by constantly pushing what they could and couldn't do, they developed into some kind of species. But then again, we aren't actually related to monkeys. But it was interesting to me how quickly your mind processes the rate that it's developing at, if I could say it that way. And you normalize your activities at gigs. I don't know how to explain it.
Because you're kind of like, it's like you're almost not letting the mind come in to block the data, but you're letting it flow through the medium, right? Instead of like, you don't want to create a block of then thinking about the information. You just want the information to come out. Exactly. I just put a comment in the Discord saying that you should check out, there's a book by a woman called Diana Reed Slattery. It's called Xenolinguistics, Psychedelics, Language, and the Evolution of Consciousness. And she, like she's been around like since the 60s and 70s, and she, in her psychedelic experiences, she didn't have like a big network that she could do it with. She couldn't go like outside with friends or do ceremony. She would do it at home by herself over a 10-year period, different psychedelics and stuff, but looking at language, because she had a language download into her in a millisecond after she wrote a book called The Maze Game. And it's all based on the waveform. It's a real language, 27 characters based on the waveform and like the yin yang. But with this, she was able to, as she's doing the 10 years of exploration, she worked on exactly what you're saying, being able to drop that mind filter and just let the trip come out of her arm. So all of her notes are with that automatic writing while she was in experiences. And then she'd write about what that means. And now with her language that she's made, the 27 glyphs called Glide, she can project them 3D into like dome ceilings. And and they all flow into each other because they're based on the waveform. They're self, they like they transform into the other glyph.
I gotta see this.
So she, with her automatic like arm filter to be able to write out the information, she can use the language to automatically project the content of the trip so she can explore the multiverse with her language. I don't know if that makes any sense the way that I rambled it, but I'll at least send you guys the PDF.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, send a PDF. I want to learn how to do that. That's the kind of stuff I want to read. Sorry.
It really does. It makes good sense. Because at the time I sat there and I thought, how the fuck can I, you know, I shouldn't be able to do anything, but I'm writing fluently and neatly and I know what I'm doing and I know what I'm saying. But even though I was writing it down in English, I wasn't hearing it in English.
Interesting. Yeah. It was coming back at like through as the vibration that the information is.
Wow. Yeah. Probably. I imagine it came through not the brain, but the heart. And it was probably more of an emotion that you translated into words.
Went electric. And there were so many, it felt like I had millions and millions of light bulbs coming through. And I thought, you are tapping into electricity. And I went to my mains box and I turned it off. And I thought, I'm going to have to actually shut down all the electricity in this house because it's coming through me.
Interesting. Work, huh? Or did
and
then it?
I thought, no. You're going to have to go and, you know, lie in your bed. And I've got a feather duvet and it felt like I was rolling around in plastic bubble wrap. And it was an uncomfortable sensation. Mm-hmm. But the thoughts and the feelings, I have to try and draw it now in order to explain it in English, because it's one of those things where I understand everything, but if someone had to say, what did you think about? I can't tell you.
Yeah, I think we've all been there as explorers.
But yeah, I mean, the mind is an absolutely hugely interesting thing. And I know that everyone's going on about mental health and depression and everything else like that. But I wonder, you know, given the size of our brains, if that more of us are beginning to use it more, if we aren't. You know, if we could use it as an kind of intelligence enhancer.
Totally. Hey, I finally got Craig to show up. All right, Craig, it is nice to see you today. I'd like to start off the quote-unquote day by saying that my daughter is joining us. She's 8 months old, actually almost 9 months old. And she doesn't know the meaning of patience or she's not very good with, you know, being quiet in general, or in recording. Right now, she's hungry. And we're eating potatoes. And just waiting on some other interesting folks to show up. Until then, I can let you listen to my daughter's cute noises. But also, I would like to just briefly mention again that we're doing these chats every week. Every other week is Tuesday, and the ones in between are Thursday. Tuesday at 9 Eastern Standard Time, and Thursday at noon, 12 Central Standard Time. I guess let's keep it Eastern. It'd be 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Looks like the Rev will be joining us soon, and I'm sure he's got a lot more to talk about than babies. Today I wanted to talk to him about somatic healing therapy, along with a few other things like PTSD and salvia trips. He has a podcast called Reincarnation, and it's quite interesting. He had an episode, I think it was episode 10, was with someone that does somatic therapy, and he does it with psychedelics, I believe. But even without the psychedelics, it seems really helpful to release traumas and just kind of get in tune with your body and what energies are being stored there, and what energies you don't want stored there anymore. I'm not sure. I want to say that this sort of thing doesn't require you to relive the trauma like a lot of things, a lot of therapies will. What's the word I'm looking for? They will require it. The interesting thing about somatic healing is that it is, yeah, you know what, I think you do kind of relive it. So he mentioned like they talked about it, and while they're talking, based on what their body does, he could see where the negativity or the negative energy was being stored. So the trauma isn't what happens to you. The trauma is when you store that energy in your body. And I keep looking to check to see if he's here, because he's probably understands this better than I do, because he, you know, was the one asking the questions to this. No, sorry. My baby just grabbed the spoonful of mashed potatoes, and it's not just mashed potatoes, it's got some tomato in there, so it's kind of messy. I'm gonna stop talking for a minute, and Rex can cut out the silence. Well, anyways, so a few of the other things I'd like to talk about were salvia experiences and PTSD, not necessarily together, but just the effect that PTSD has on our society as a whole. It's really prevalent. It's like everywhere. Like, people that you wouldn't expect to have PTSD are struggling from it. And some people don't even understand why. But I think the biggest thing is war veterans. You want some water, baby? Coming back, of course, they have trauma from seeing all sorts of horrific things and having to keep going about their day. Of course, when you're on the battlefield, you can't deal with an example a friend gave is basically his, I was gonna say friend, maybe it wasn't a friend, I think it was a friend, but it was definitely another soldier on the same side of the battlefield. Someone in his, I want to say a bunch of like weird words that are connected with video games, because I've never been in war, never been in the army. I would never join the army unless, you know, I guess there was a good cause that was actually threatening to invade or something. I don't know. It seems like America's wars are mostly regime change wars, where they don't like that this country doesn't want to use their money, or you know, this country has oil and they want to charge too much for it, so let's bomb the shit out of them. And I chuckle at that, not because it's actually funny, but because it's kind of, I guess what I do is I find humor in things to cope. And
It's strange how we can find pain to be funny. Like, your best friend falls on his ass, and you just bust out laughing. Is that like an anxious laugh? Or are we as a society? Hey, what's up, man?
Yo, how's it going? Sorry for that delay. I just need to make sure that my mic is on the right mic. How are you doing?
I'm good. Can you hear?